afternoon, St. Louis, DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Tuesday to everybody. Happy Tuesday, Wheels.
Hi.
Hi.
What's up? Should we do that like the old TV commercial? What's up? Did you like that one or did you hate that one back
in the day?
It's fine. It got worn.
I'm trying to think, is that in the same era as Budweiser?
Yeah, around then time. Yeah, roughly. Yeah.
What a giant thing that was.
Yeah.
I love them frogs.
Everyone did. I think I know one of the guys who did one of those.
One of the frogs?
One of the syllables, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which syllable?
I think he was the bud guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then Andrew and I know the guy who was, who's my boy that sits on Jabba the Hutt?
Salacious Crumb.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
He left us, unfortunately.
I know. Oh. That's very
He's
sad.
He's no longer with us.
Very sad.
One of the coolest little side characters.
Yeah.
I don't know, is that a Sweet 16 something? Like the most random characters?
Sure.
From a show or movies?
We just did Best Condiment.
Because there's a lot like that. They're just like, they're not really big parts, but they're there, and you're like, everybody knows them.
Yeah.
That's how Boba Fett started. Like, he was just a side quest guy. He wasn't anything really big in the first three movies, but everybody thought he looked cool and he was a badass. And that's what eventually grew into The Mandalorian and Boba Fett being a bigger deal.
That's what happened to Andrew. He wasn't supposed to be a big part of the show.
There it is.
He would not be denied.
Everybody was just like, man, that armor's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. ear update.
Ear.
I'm fully released from medical care.
Nice.
I'm fine.
Nice.
I'm good.
No side effects?
What an odyssey that was. That was my own personal.
I feel like I was lost for 10 years at sea.
Christopher Nolan, make a movie of that.
What do we call it?
Just ear.
Ear to see.
The ear to see. This is why you're on the show.
That right there is the Boba Fett move right there.
That's very, very good.
That was good.
That's awesome. Jacob says hello from Walmart headquarters in Bentonville. Hey, looking for the Hall of Fame for Dave's Fox Ball. It's on the third level. You'll find it there. Yeah. I feel like we have to start with this crazy story about the president and his escape from Turkey. And I just told Rach 10 minutes ago, I said, I wish I didn't think that the president was so toxic and damaging because he can be a hell of a good time. Like, he really can. I don't know another human who engages and entertains as much as he does on a daily basis. You could pay me $1 billion a year, and I'm a pretty creative guy, and say, Dave, we want you to do three things a day that's going to shock everyone. I couldn't keep that pace up, but Trump somehow does. So I took such glee about an hour ago because Rach had not heard the story.
Oh.
And I was able to, so if there are obviously some of you out there who haven't heard the story, and if I get it wrong, because it's a bit of a Rube Goldberg thing, kind of a Frasier episode, correct me if I'm wrong, because I may not have every detail right. But we all remember a few weeks ago when the president was just completely enamored with the Qatari Air Force One, and he flew it to Turkey. And then he gave us this total BS story, which we all knew was BS, when he was like, oh, and I love this plane more than any other, but there are some army guys who want to sit in the pilot seat, and so we're just going to fly it to them and let them, you know, blah, blah. So we all knew that was a lie. And then it came out in the press that there was a threat against Air Force One. And the Trump administration reacted so violently. They were subpoenaing, the New York Times phone records and stuff. And I remember saying on the show, like, I don't get it. What's the big deal? Like, who cares? And now we know why he cared, because he was trying to keep this from seeing the light of day. So here's what I think happened. Or here's what I understand happened. There was a credible threat, credible enough that the president did what I'm about to tell you he did. And he said, okay, Qatari One is going somewhere else, but we have the old Air Force One. It's right here. We're all going to fly back on that. We're cool. And so he gets up, he climbs the stairs, he waves, and then his staff boards and the whole media pool boards And then he goes out a secret exit and gets into a catering truck that drives him to another smaller military jet that he flies on back to the U.S.
England.
Yeah. And then he somehow sneaks out of that one, gets back on Air Force One, and walks down the stairs. Now, pretty slick trick, right? But the rub of this that people are being so critical of is, as far as we know, there was a threat against the other Air Force One as well. And so, in fact, he had said the day before to the reporters, if I go down, you go down. So, right? And so evidently he sort of just left them ass out to fly back on Air Force One under enough of a threat that he wedged his ass into a catering truck. And now everyone's like, so that's just cool?
And not just the press.
Yeah.
All of his staff.
He took Hegseth with him.
Right. Oh, did he?
Yes.
Oh, shocking that Ken Doll jumped a ride.
And I was saying that I don't see a big difference between that and if I received an email saying that someone was going to show up at the studio and kill me during the show tomorrow, and right before the show, I get fake sick and leave and let you guys do the show. And no one shows up and kills anyone, but then you guys find out about it, you wouldn't be very happy with me.
Mm-mm.
For good reason.
Mm-hmm.
So someone help me make sense of this.
You know, it's funny because I saw a description of it, and like, this would be kind of a neat little cloak and dagger story if that part didn't like punctuate the end. You just left everybody else out to dry. So there was enough of a threat to sneak around and take a different plane without telling anybody you're taking a different plane. But then we're just going to leave everybody else out there as possibly a target?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
That doesn't seem very cool.
And
if you work for him and you're on that plane, you're like, wait a minute, you did what to me? You left.
And everyone on the plane thought he was on the plane. And evidently, like air traffic controllers and such, also, it was identified as Liberty's on the plane, whatever his nickname is.
Okay.
So no one except like maybe just a very few people
knew
that he was on that other plane.
If it went down that way, that's not cool.
That is not cool.
I mean, it's also obviously not cool that there was a threat they had to be concerned with. And again, take whatever measures you need to protect the president of the United States.
Yeah.
But also maybe the 300 people that are on the other Air Force One should be protected too.
Yeah. Yeah, fly them home commercial.
So what was the threat? Was the threat that they were going to like blow up the plane?
I've not heard that, Rach.
Well, there have been reports for a while now that Iran has put out threats on Donald Trump's life. And Iran and Turkey share a border, so it's very close. But I also thought we were told that their whole Air Force was destroyed and that all of their defenses have been destroyed. So what threat could they pose if that's true?
Yeah, maybe surface to air, maybe a bomb. You know, like Rage said.
Yeah. I mean, again, could be anything. And I get it. Like, to me, there's nothing weird about the possibility of a threat there. You're very close to the border. It wouldn't take that much technology or that much weaponry to make some kind of attack at close proximity.
No.
Right? It's not crazy. There's nothing weird about that. It's just the whole, like, leaving all those other people out to dry.
Yes.
And also, I guess Congress is a little annoyed because nobody let them know about the threat.
Right.
Like, they didn't need to know about the, you know, the cloak and dagger change planes thing, but they probably do need, they're supposed to be notified if there's a threat of that kind.
One of the things that makes me so uncomfortable about Trump is his complete willingness and comfort at throwing American citizens under the bus to save his own skin. Even in stupid ways. For example, he knew what he was doing, and he knew what he was doing wasn't cool, and yet he was subpoenaing all the records of these journalists who outed him for lying about where Qatari One was going, thus creating problems for them, threatening to put people in jail for 10 years for leaking. Hey, dude. Leave the Americans alone. This is on you. This is your F up. Don't punish them. The same way with the reflecting pool. Now he has actually come out, I don't know if you saw this, and said, well, there's no... Remember when he said, oh, there's video?
Oh, yeah.
There's photographs.
We have witnesses. Two of them.
And like, well, when are we going to see it? And he goes, you'll see it at trial. Lie. Total friggin' lie, which he now admits, we don't have any evidence, just the damage that our own interior has said is not caused from vandalism. It's caused by this shoddy job. But he indicted like 8 Americans.
He indicted an Olympic athlete.
Yes. How dare you just be so cavalier about hurting American citizens who have done literally nothing wrong just to cover up your lies and stupidity.
And if you're willing to do it for something so trivial.
Yes, that's...
Wouldn't you be doing it for the bigger things? And then people wonder why. Why do you doubt everything? This is why.
Yeah.
This is why, because... when there's factual evidence that says this did not happen and they continue to say, yes, it did. Trust us. We have evidence. We'll show you someday, maybe down the road, 100 years. Just like, when was Infrastructure Week supposed to happen again during the first? Like every week was like, oh, next week, 2 weeks, you'll see. We got this planned. Like at some point, crying wolf is going to get people going, all right, I don't believe you anymore.
I think we're there.
Well, I mean, a lot of us have been there for a long time, but like, this is why, when you wonder, why don't you believe anything? Because what we're just seeing, like with the reflecting pool, for how long now? You've been blaming people without evidence. You've been swearing up and down, telling people they're wrong. You're wrong. It's terrible. We do have it. And then all of a sudden, like, oh yeah, yeah, we don't have that.
Indicting,
like, it's no big deal.
Indicting American citizens in federal court, knowing that you're lying, knowing you know that. No one showed him video. No one showed him a photograph. And what's the big friggin' deal if he just said, hey, you know what? The first attempt at the reflecting pool didn't work out. We're going to do it again. We'll get it right this time.
That's the part that's so confusing. And that's the part where it gets to me. This is a similar thing that ideologically that I felt about Bill Clinton back in the day. Like, if you're willing to lie to your wife and kid, you'll lie to me. Right. I mean, like, if you're willing to lie to the people you supposedly care the most about, this is speaking about Bill Clinton, you'll lie to me. If you'll lie about the pettiest, dumbest things that don't even matter, well, of course you're going to lie about the bigger things. Right?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Iran, did you see what Iran did?
No.
They put their you know what down. Uh-oh. They said, not only have we not been negotiating with Trump, who keeps saying, you know, they're dying to make a deal. They said, we won't be interested in negotiating until January 21st of 2029 when he leaves office, which it's Iran. They're performative and they're hyperbolic. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of their, you know, defining traits.
For all the things we talk about with the administration,
sure.
Iran's got the same, dynamic.
They're not the good guys.
You can't just be like, oh, yeah, we trust them. They're sure. I bet they're telling the truth.
But the whole deal maker thing is kind of going out the window as well.
Message in my head that the papers had all come, but your manual is dead. The daylight's coming on.
Rachel, I've never heard this version.
Wandering through the dark.
Is this like the acoustic version?
Yes. Yeah. It's one of my favorite songs. I've never heard this. That's really cool. Who has a better soda? QT had me one today, or McDonald's?
QT.
Yeah.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, I agree. Because they also have way more varieties. McDonald's doesn't have diet, do we?
Rach is about to tell you you're wrong.
I liked McDonald's sodas, but by the end, it's much. I feel like even the Diet Coke is like quite sweet and syrupy. And Andrew knows all about the different soda machines and stuff. I'm wondering if that's just like the way they distribute their syrups.
Yeah, McDonald's kind of overclocks a lot of their syrup. They're famous for doing that. It's how they get that kind of distinctive flavor.
Don't they have
don't
they have an agreement with Coke to do that?
And that is correct.
Yes.
Yeah,
like they're the only place that can or something.
Theirs is the only one that comes in a steel container, whereas most of them come in plastic bags.
Oh, yeah.
And that keeps it different.
Okay. I believe that.
Yeah, because I mean, and I like the McDonald's Diet Coke. I do.
Sure.
I like it a lot. I don't know if I would want one without McDonald's food, though.
Hmm.
Oh, you know what I mean?
Good call. I get you. The tastes go together.
Yeah.
That's and, a really
and
good
the QT,
call.
I, Wheels is right. There's just so much variety at QT. I can put the cherry syrup on
yes.
anything. And it's,
yes.
This is nice.
You gotta love the cherry syrup.
Plus, you gotta have the dew if it's gonna be the best.
I also like at QT, they have a really great like tea and lemonade selection.
They do.
Kind of on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice.
You ever get one of them Frizzonis?
I feel like back in the day, I got some Frizzonis. QT used to have a chocolate shake. Do you guys remember this?
I think so.
You would take it and you would like put, they had a machine that would shake it up for you.
You just take the cup that's in a little freezer of its own and you put it in there and it stirs it up, yeah.
My saddest thing with QT was when they took the whipped cream machine out because I would go every morning and get coffee and just load it with whipped cream. And it was just so easy. And I'm stupid. So, like, when I show up and the machine's different, I'm like, me not know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no.
Yeah. It's a sad day. I really do. I don't know if there are other people like that, but, like, we went to Ronnie's Plaza to see the Odyssey, and their soda machines are like the space shuttle. And I had to watch someone do it before I had the guts to just walk up and look stupid.
What's the biggest downside to that not going great?
I think I can trace it back to an event that happened to me.
One. Wow.
When I was 14 years old, me and Brad Wells, who's now the police chief of Wood River, we went to work at Willerette's Horseradish Farm. And most of the guys working there were like 18 to 20, which is basically 50-year-olds when you're 14.
Right, yeah, yeah.
They're men with beards and, you know. So the first thing we did, like 7 in the morning, is we went out in this giant muddy field and we moved irrigation pipe. And irrigation pipe is about 30 feet long and you have about 10 of them in a row. And then what you do is you unhook them and you move them over about 50 feet and you water that part. So we had a whole bunch of guys going all the way down the line and you would just pick it up and you'd walk like knee deep in the mud.
Oh boy.
Wasn't fun. And mine kept disengaging and dropping and we'd have to stop, put it together and start again. I didn't realize that the spout had to stay up. If the spout turns the screw, it comes out.
Okay.
But the PTSD I have is that the job boss was like 50 yards away from me and he was like, what the F and DD kind of dumbass friggin' kid, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, no.
And it happened like 3 or 4 times. And finally, this like 18-year-old ex-convict walks up to me and he goes, dude, you have to keep the spout up. And I've never been so thankful to anyone in my life.
I get it.
But being 14, first day of working anywhere, getting screamed at by a 50-year-old, I really do think that set me off on a path my whole life of just like not wanting to look stupid.
Don't want to be first.
Don't want to be first.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. That's pretty harsh on a 14-year-old.
I don't know if you noticed, but I'm an oversharer. Do you want to see Wheels' head come off?
Sure. Let's do it.
What 800 million things could set me off?
University of Michigan has a new program where they will not give freshmen first semester grades because they're afraid that would affect their mental health.
Oh, for God's sake.
So they want them to just spend your first semester getting to know where the bathrooms are, what bar are you going to go to, where are your classes, but we're not going to grade you.
So you're not getting graded at all?
At all.
It's not that they're not showing you the grade, you're just not getting graded.
That's my understanding.
Seems so stupid. I mean, does it, for most of your like entry level freshman 100 level classes, it probably doesn't matter. Because a lot of that stuff is basically pass or fail. Like you either get the main thing or you don't.
But it's also the easiest you're ever going to.
Yes. Why are we like, did you guys, I don't know about, Dave, did you feel like high school was harder than college? I had a harder time keeping up in high school than in college.
Yeah.
Like, because it was a much more demanding schedule. You're there 8-9 hours a day, and then you're getting, in my case, all 4 years, it was probably 2.5 hours of homework every day.
Yeah.
Sometimes more, sometimes less, but I would say average was probably 2-2.5. College wasn't like that. College, you're 15 hours a week in class, and then whatever time you need at whatever time of the day you're available to do, you know, homework assignments or projects or whatever. Do we really need to do that for people that are just starting off in the easiest classes they're going to have?
Well, let's be real. This isn't, I don't think like high achievers are going to be going and seeking this out.
No, they're going to be pissed about it.
This is for rich kids who just want the college experience. And it's like, they're just going to college to have fun at college, which, you know what? That's great. Like, good for you. Wasn't my experience.
Yeah.
Wasn't same. A lot of people's experience. But, you know, there are quite a few people who go and they're there to have fun. And if you don't have to worry about your grades at all the first semester, I bet you're going to have a marvelous time.
It's a great marketing tool.
Right.
Well,
but like Harvard's not going to do this. You know what I'm saying?
Michigan calls itself an elite academic institution. Like they walk around
anyone
with that reputation.
Anyone can call themselves anything.
But
I'm not sure anything in or from Michigan is elite.
I'm just telling you how they put it. And like if you're going to be a place
right
that's supposed
head.
To be. Yeah, I get you, man.
Okay.
I get you.
All right, fine.
I think. Is it, like I don't the whole point of like college is preparing you for the real world.
For some people, for others, the whole point of college is for status and to have fun.
But the whole point of the college is to prepare you for the real world.
No, the whole point of the college is to make as much money as they possibly can.
Well, that's where it's gone wrong. Right. This is kind of the point. Our priorities suck. And if the academic leadership isn't going to take their mission seriously, well, then how can anybody take anything seriously about the whole system?
Rach, it's such a great point that I didn't think of, which I should because my daughter's going into her senior year at KU, and everything about KU, and I'm sure most colleges, I think Mizzou's even more than this, is marketing.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we got this, we got that, come on in.
We got the same thing doing the visits, you know, when we went to Alabama, that's where my kid went to undergrad. It was like going on a
resort.
Yes, it was like a tour of a resort town.
Yeah.
Like, look at these dorms. They were built yesterday. Look how they're better than the places you stay when you go on vacation. And they are. It's unbelievable. Like the arms race in that. But again, I can live with those things if you're still going to fulfill the mission of preparing students. If your freshman year first semester grades are going to bother you that much, maybe college isn't for you. Right.
Well, I will go back to Rachel's point. I think it's a good one that colleges market and the people who are marketable look at it and go, that sounds great to me. Sounds great to me.
Yeah, I think she's right.
Like when we're in Indiana, we're walking around in your little group of 12 and they said, you know, one of the great things about Indiana is you only have to take one math class, and you can take like a rudimentary math class. And of course, everyone's like, oh, rock on. This is great. I mean, that's kind of a similar example of like, hey, if you don't want to work real hard.
And I'm just saying I didn't have anything close to that experience. I went to community college because that's what I could afford to do. Mm-hmm. I worked the whole time I was in college. I did not have this experience where it's like, I'm going away from home and I'm partying every night. I just didn't have that. So when you don't have that and then you see it happening with other people and you see the way other people talk about it, it's like, well, yeah, I mean, this is great. It seems very fun.
Yep.
But there's this huge like class undertone to it of like, look what we can afford to do.
No, you're not wrong.
Totally right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you're just going to have a great, it's like, yeah, and then we send it. She doesn't even have to worry about her grades her first semester. It's like, okay, I mean, I'm glad that that's your life.
I do think it's cheating them. Because my first year of law school, where your grades pretty much dictate the rest of your career, was so terrible and so stress-inducing and anxiety-filled. And yet, in hindsight, it's one of my best memories. It was a challenge, and I did okay, and I succeeded. And I remember going to my mailbox and getting those little blue postcards with your grade from Crim Law and stuff like that. And I know this is like the ultimate old guy thing to say, but it's also true that some of your best memories and the things that make you into a better person are somewhere between suffering and low-key suffering.
Yeah, but you learn more from struggling and failing than you learn from just either no results at all or even just mildly Agreed. Positive results. And we're not teaching people that age that it's A, okay to struggle, and B, there's a path out of it.
Yeah.
If we're not teaching that skill, then you're not preparing people to move into the, like, when you get your first job, they're not going to be like, okay, buddy, your first 6 months, you're getting a paycheck, but no performance review.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to happen. So, and that is still a relatively easy level of study when you're talking about your most kids who are going to mostly be in 100 level classes when you're a freshman, right? Yeah. Some will have a couple that are beyond that, but that would be because it's a strong suit for you, right? If you start in a subject at the 200 or 300 level, it's probably because your high school testing showed you didn't need the 100 level, which means you're proficient at that thing.
Craig says, there's always the trades. People still need to have HVAC, electrical, plumbing, etc. It can be a field that you make some good money and in demand. Phoebe really wanted to go to a four-year university, but we had that talk with her, and had she said, I'm going to join a union and become an apprentice, I would have been happy as a clam.
It's a totally valid choice,
happy
but
as
I'll say for that, you think you can take one of those jobs and not be expected to be able to do the job?
Your first 6 months, we're not going to test you at all.
I mean, if you're going that route, Craig's totally right. That is an absolutely valid route in demand, and it's a needed thing. But if you can't handle the failure of, oh, I got a C in my first semester, how are you going to handle anything?
Yep.
And again, I don't blame the students for that. We just have to stop trying to protect people from failing as young people. Failing is where you learn.
Yeah. Here's a weird story. A high school football player was in practice, and his coach noticed movement under his helmet. So they took his helmet off, and there was a 2-foot-long copperhead snake in his helmet.
How did he not notice?
So a football helmet has padding.
Yeah.
And it was somehow under
in the
padding.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of, because there are spaces in there.
Yeah.
So if it's a skinny one, they can probably get in there.
So he didn't get bit, thank God.
Boy, that would not be great.
Crazy.
That coach has some good eyeballs.
Yeah.
Like, bro, your helmet's moving.
Maybe he put it in there.
He might have put it in there, yeah.
A little bit of salvation for me on the Denisovans. I said they're 8 feet tall. Mm. Wheel said they're like 5'3". I said he was stupid. And then the next day, I said, I'm stupid, because he was right.
Are we both stupid?
No, we're it's in the middle.
Oh, good.
All right. There's a new study that said they could have been up to 6'3".
Oh, okay.
Which at that time, everyone was like,
oh, my God, but that's also
4'2".
Right, I was safe. 6'3" at that time is massive.
Yeah, you're a giant.
Yeah.
There's also a new color. Have you heard this?
No.
It's called Olo.
Olo?
O-L-O.
It's probably just like blue, right?
It's the greenest green, and only 5 people in the world have seen it, because it's not like in a box and you just go, Olo. You have to like have your eyes dilated and, you know, jump through a bunch of hoops or whatever it is. But they discovered it because there's only so many colors that the eye can perceive, and they found a way for the human eye to perceive a brand new color.
It's not a brand new. It's green.
Oh, boy.
Well, I just looked this up. So the AI overview came up with it. It says, Olo is an imaginary hypersaturated blue-green color. What does that mean?
It means it's green. It's not.
But I mean, is it imaginary only in the sense that we can't see it, so we have to imagine what it looks like, unless you have these filters or you're one of the 5 people that can do it?
I can imagine what it looks like. It was like green.
It's blue-green, apparently.
So I'm reading about it here. The human retina contains three types of cone cells that help us see color. There's the L cones and the M cones and the S cones. And the scientists
scones.
With Olo, they have been able to isolate the M scone. Or, damn it!
I am so sorry.
The M cones. So it is kind of, I guess it is
so
kind
hungry.
Of an imaginary color because it's like, yeah, well, okay. What if we did this?
Like, yeah, what if there was like a new kind of green? Well, it's just green. I just feel like I've been jaded by this before because I feel like every 3 or 4 years I see a color that's like, or I see a story that's like, we've invented a new kind of blue. And it's like, nah, it's just blue.
Sorry, Dave. Dave seems disappointed.
Oh, I'm a little disappointed.
Really?
Yeah.
It's still fascinating, but it was just funny. How do you even go, you know what? I bet there is a color that
Dave's Googling scone delivery.
That nobody can see. Yeah, I'm thinking about them too.
Now, when you can isolate just the M scones, the people who saw it say it was jaw-dropping.
Yeah. Jaw-dropping.
So apparently it's like the coolest green you could ever see.
Four of the people who saw it died.
Yeah, they simply passed away.
It was so amazing. They're like, you know what? Take me home.
It greened out.
Isolating M scones is what I call breakfast.
I'm sorry I did that to you, Rachel.
It's okay. It was just like...
Can I tell you my experience?
I felt so bad when
I got a weird text message from someone I didn't know while you were doing your thing.
The scones thing?
And I looked up and you were saying scones over and over.
Dave's like, what are they even talking
about? I'm like, man, you can't take your eyes off this show for 2 seconds.
We cut down a whole new path.
I thought I had a pretty good story there. With the old green is green and she's moved on to scones. Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Rach, who's the ex-president? Obama has a podcast?
Yeah, he's starting a podcast.
I agree. I think that's beneath him.
I just don't want I don't want you to be the president and then you're doing like ads for, I don't know.
Yeah, right. Casper mattresses.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You're selling metal billfolds.
Blue Chew.
I liked how Dave kind of rolled.
That's the big one that they all sell.
That's awesome.
I like how Dave kind of rolled his exclamation into the president's name. He was like, oh, Obama? Oh, Obama's got a podcast?
Now, his podcast is maybe classier than most. It's called A Great Book with Barack Obama. And it's like a limited series so far, from what I understand. It's going to be him and 6 different guests discussing books that have shaped his outlook on life.
Really smutty, like romance fantasy books.
It's like, you know, these Harlequin romances?
About fairy queens and dark princes.
Can I tell you just real quick?
As long as it's got Fabio on the cover.
My dad had a little cabinet in the basement that had his girly magazines. And there was also a paperback novel called Glover and had a picture of a Navy guy with a lady.
All right.
Now, I'm not going to read a book on purpose because there's Playboys here. But one day I was kind of thumbing through it. It was a porn book. Like, it was like super, super Glover was.
With your family name on it?
Yes.
That's kind of crazy because your dad was in the Navy.
Oh, my God.
Was it a self-written?
An autobiography?
Yeah. Yeah. Did he self-publish?
Only for himself. He just wrote the book for himself.
I need to look that up.
That was
I'll have to
Navy.
Google that. Yeah.
I'm going to look it up.
Is that what it... That's just it? It was just the name on there?
I think so.
Man.
Pretty sure.
Are you sure that wasn't just right the now. Author?
That's funny.
Hold on. Glover by Francis Pollini.
I've got The Mechanics of Mistletoe, Glover Family Saga, and Christian Romance.
No, I've got it right here. This was a book that almost every sailor was reading when I was in the Navy in 1967. I think it was because of the cover and some of the explicit descriptions of sex.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, there you go.
It is actually a very serious novel, however.
Oh, of course.
Central figure is American Air Force. Okay, Air Force. Enlisted man stationed in the UK who had been a star football player before having to enter service. He is a brute with women and likes his sex as impersonal as possible. Oh my goodness.
Jeez. Wow.
Yeah, I didn't read that much of it.
My lord.
But
there's some, a gay romance.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a little more to this.
And a gay romance?
There is. Somebody's, yeah.
DGS Book Club.
Much of the story is driven by his interaction with an officer who has a homosexual interest in him.
Who doesn't?
And aspires
to... That sounds
to,
so medical.
Yeah, yeah. So Glover had another interest.
3.4 stars on Goodreads.
It doesn't say in this thing that Glover was also interested, but it says the other person had the interest.
Yeah, that's the Glover way.
You guys love admiration.
We love luring men in.